Hello, my name is Chip Lang. You're listening to Total EM. The podcast we are covering today is all about the neurological exam. This is something we run into every single day, every single shift. This is something that you're going to see and comply immediately after. We've had people asking us more about the neuro exam, not just how to perform a good solid neuro exam that we can use in the department, but do so quickly and still have the details we need, but also about some subtleties such as the HINTS exam, as well as how to document a good neuro exam. Recently, we were on Foam Frat with Tyler Cristofoli talking about the neuro exam. Now, that one was a little more about pre-hospital side of things, but it all still applies the same way, so it's worth checking out that podcast. Furthermore, we also talk about some other things here about using some of the subtleties that we really didn't get to talk about on that podcast specifically. One of the big things that we are going to go over is about the different components. Things that we like to do in the neuro exam is check for higher functions, the cranial nerves, sensorimotor and peripheral, the Glasgow Coma Score, and the cerebellar exam. The cerebellar exam is such a key one that it's worth talking about another part of it. Again, the video is going to cover a lot of the big things there, so when you finish up this podcast, also please check out the video, watch it, learn a little bit more from it. But let's talk about something that is a hot topic. It's been around for a little bit. Thanks to MCRIT, it kind of brought it to the front stage, but some other people have covered it as well, such as Foamcast, which is also worth checking their post out as well. That's the HINTS exam. The HINTS exam is a rather interesting exam because it's something that neurology does, and not everyone in neurology does it, and it's not actually as easy of an exam as you'd think. It takes some skill with it. So just because you know how to do it doesn't mean you'd be good at it. And this is something that I will perform in certain patients, but I'm cautious about for different reasons. One is because it's hard to do it well. It's hard to have a patient who's compliant with it too, but also because it's one of those exams that it's hard to translate out, and you can't use it with every patient, especially the ones that I want to use it the most with. Seems like it's the ones that either it's going to delay things too much, or they're just not a good candidate for whatever reasons. Maybe they've had neck surgery, so they can't really mobilize their neck to do the exam that I want to do, such as assessing the vestibular ocular reflex with the head impulse testing. But there are still things like looking for nystagmus or checking the skew, which are other parts of that exam. This exam is so detailed of a component that it is worth checking out the video again, which we're going to have on there. It's from MCRIT originally. The links are on there as well. Credit due for them for that, as well as the original author of all this and the paper. The thing with the HINTS exam is that, like I said, it's not as easy as you would think. Basically, when we talk about the HINTS exam, we have to keep in mind that this is something that previously, when they've done studies with it and everything, they talk about hours worth of training to get good at this. The other thing to keep in mind with this is not only does it take a long time to get good at it, maybe to the point that maybe not all of us in emergency medicine can get good enough with it, but also that you only have to perform this in certain patients that fit certain criteria, especially for that continuous vertigo. This is someone that not every patient's going to get better with it, and you're going to want to check it out more thoroughly. This is better for your vertigo or your dizzy type patients versus, say, the other types of patients you may want to do a neuro exam on, such as the one that hit their head, but they look fine, but you would just want to thoroughly document and do a quick, good exam. The exam I do can, if it's normal, take only about 2 minutes or so. Also, we have to keep in mind that the patients that usually qualify for a HINTS exam already have some obvious findings that they probably don't need all the extra details. A good cerebellar exam is going to include what we need to see, such as they have trunk leg ataxia or they have gait instability. Two big things that really are going to already make us think that this is someone who has a posterior stroke or someone who's at high risk for such. So again, the HINTS exam is probably not something everyone should be doing, but if you are interested in it, learn it well and start applying it appropriately. What about some of the other components of the exam? This is something that, again, it's things that we have to get good at, and we have to think about what we use and what we don't use. For example, like I said at the beginning, I break this down into multiple sections. The first section is thinking like, are they alert and oriented? A lot of people use times 3, some will use times 4. The big thing is if it's abnormal, specify. Specify what is normal and what is abnormal. Don't just say their ANO times 2 and then don't say, well, what's the one or two things that is different? Talk about their mood and affect. Is it normal? Are they tearful? Are they anxious? Are they combative, agitated? What are they? Explain that. How's their speech pattern? Is it clear? Is it slurred? Does the cadence seem off? Are they talking like William Shatner, for example, that irregular cadence when he's acting in Star Trek as Captain Kirk? Does it sound something like that, or is it just a nice, clean, normal conversation? Cognition. This one's really tricky because especially in our kids or people who have some sort of mental disability, this is something where we're going to say it's at baseline. The caregiver says it's at baseline. But keep in mind that cognition can be something that varies person by person. So we want a general concept of that. The same thing is true with the mood and affect. If it's kids, I like to have that the parent says that their mood and affect is at baseline. When we move on to cranial nerves, some people, when they're freehanding it, will say cranial nerves 1 through 12 intact. Really, it's hard to actually check the reflexes there or the first cranial nerve, because unless you're carrying around cinnamon, coffee, stuff like that, you really can't say that you checked that one out. The other thing to keep in mind is that you want to document other things. I like to just say no signs of acute CVA if there truly aren't any. It's just another reinforcement that, hey, I was looking at this. Also, the fact that there's no facial palsy, no tongue deviation, no hearing deficit. Usually, I'll include extraocular movements intact if I haven't already specified that elsewhere. This is just all reinforcement of those points. Furthermore, you can also add your PERLA there, but if you are documenting PERLA, make sure you're doing all parts of PERLA. A lot of people document it, but they didn't actually do it all. Next part is the sensorimotor and peripheral. So I like to put that there's no gross motor deficits, assuming, of course, that there aren't any. Document that 5 out of 5 strength throughout. You can say bilateral upper and lower extremities or however you want to do that. Again, you want to also document the no gross sensory loss and that there are normal movements. That would be a normal exam there. The cerebellar, I like to add enough details in this. Talking about the Romberg test, I usually throw in pronator drift at the same time. I'm going to do the finger-to-nose exam. Sometimes I do the rapid alternating movements. That can be hard in some of our elderly population, but you can use it and make sure to document it if you are doing it. The heel to shin, I really like that as well. But the big one for me, I need that gait whenever possible. Certain people, you can't do the gait, but you need to do other things. This may be a time when you throw in the HINTS exam if you really can't get a good gait for whatever reason and you can't truly assess that truncal instability. The other thing to keep in mind is then the Glasgow Coma Score. I know it's not a perfect exam, but unless it's a 15, I try and break this down. You know, eyes, whatever out of 4, speech, whatever out of 5, and motor, whatever out of 6. Again, these are really simple components. These are things you can easily do. This is something that in your electronic records, you may be able to just have a quick text and throw that right in there. If you don't have a quick text, just get really good, have a copy paste. I don't have the best record system, so what I do is I actually save kind of a basic email of all my quick text and I kind of type it in there. But luckily my chart uses most of this stuff, so I just kind of tie it in there. But the big part is when you do an exam, make sure you're documenting all the components. This is only to help you out even further and to make sure that whoever's going to pick this patient up next understands what's going on there as well. Now, some of you may be asking, well, what about reflexes? I sometimes do reflexes, not on a regular basis, just because it tends not to actually add any benefit. Again, if there's something specific that I'm looking for, I may end up doing the reflexes. Keep in mind that some people may not have the best, for example, patellar reflex. And so things like the gingivorous maneuver is going to help boost that up. The gingivorous maneuver, by the way, is a really cool thing. Found this out in my undergrad, did quite a few studies on it, actually did some papers on it as well. But that's beside the point. But the gingivorous maneuver is just one thing you may need to do. But if you're going to end up using it, you need to document that you use it as well to overcome the issues that you needed to properly assess reflexes. So again, I don't usually do this unless I have a very specific cause or reason to think I need to do this. So in summary, a good neurological exam, we're going to include videos of that as well as video of how to do the HINTS exam. Because again, you have to see this to really know it. But these are quick exams. I'm not going to use the HINTS exam a lot because, again, it doesn't really fit for most of my patients. And the information I need, I can usually get from the cerebellar exam. And my main reservation is more about the head impulse because certain people with neck issues, it probably isn't going to be good, or people aren't just really going to be compliant for it. Or maybe they just aren't the appropriate patient because they don't have that continuous vertigo. It's helpful. It's there. We'll definitely include those in the show notes, but don't feel like that is something you have to do with every exam. Instead, focus on a just good general neuro exam and start doing this regularly. The more you get a practice and routine with this, the more natural it's going to be, the quicker you're going to be able to do this and still detect abnormalities. This is something that, again, you can do anywhere. You don't have to be in the ED. You can do this in the clinics. You can do this pre-hospitally. It doesn't matter. You can do it on the floor. The big thing is that you're at least doing this exam and then you're documenting it well, like we talked about. All of this is to help you out and make you a better clinician. But again, this is all we really have to talk about right now. We've really hit this hard. This is meant to be a quick podcast. Obviously, if you have any questions, please let me know. I'd like to build off of this as much as possible. But until next time, continue to provide total care everywhere.